Hello and welcome to The Inside Scoop, a podcast about everything and anything that is Lane County Health and Human Services. I am one of your hosts, Jason Davis, and joining me is my co-host, Biz Henry.
Hi, everyone. My name is Biz. Let's get the scoop with our guest, Mackenzie Neal from Youth Services. We're super interested to hear about her work at Youth Services, and she's also going to share a lot of information about the Equity Lens Toolkit.
And joining us today is Mackenzie Neal. Good afternoon, Mackenzie.
Good afternoon. Thanks for having me.
Of course. So let's begin with a little bit of introduction. Tell us a little bit about yourself, what you do at Lane County, where you work, all that good stuff.
Yeah, so I started working with the county about 5 years ago, and I work for Youth Services, which is our juvenile program, better known as the John Serbu Center. I started out there as a victim advocate, actually, first, and now I am currently, as of about 2 years, a juvenile probation officer, which is a term juvenile counselor where we work, but we are juvenile probation officers.
So can you just give me a little fill-in on, like, your day-to-day, like what your job entails or what you do day to day?
Yeah, it can be really up in the air sometimes. It kind of really depends. But a lot of times, especially on, let's say, like a Monday morning, there could be kids who maybe came into our detention program over the weekend. And if that happens, it could possibly have a court hearing in the morning. So sometimes there's court hearings around 8:30 or 10. Right now, during these kind of crazy times, we're having our unit meetings where we all meet virtually, or some people are in the office, and have those just to kind of check in and staff any cases and just see if anyone needs support. Then it's just kind of contacting kids if I have set up appointments where kids are supposed to call me. Could also be if I get a new case, sending out just kind of appointment letters or just making contact with them, letting them know that we did get a charge maybe for a kid. And then sometimes it's just the medial work of entering notes and making case plans and just typing up history and backgrounds, which is probably my least favorite because I like to be more hands-on and doing the work and working with the kids. But it's an important process just in case, you know, all the record keeping that we need to do.
So you're talking about working with the kids. And, you know, I think for people who don't work in the juvenile justice system, you could probably assume or maybe you would think that that would be a constant challenge because, you know, the kids are there for a reason, right? But is that true? I mean, is it just constantly challenging? Tell us a little bit about that work and what motivates you to do it. What are some of the high points? What are some of the challenges, the low points?
Probably one of the most challenging things that we see is social media, because when you watch youth that crimes that happen in the public's eye and that gets put on social media and gets kind of moved around, and so many people see it and so many people are now becoming the court, and it's like you're now in the court of the public. It is very, very hard when we know what we have to do and what we're actually capable of doing and not capable of doing. The whole, like, lock them up or, like, they should go to jail just really isn't a thing in much of our work. It's right. Like, we're not, our whole goal is to not have kids in detention for that long. And that can be really, really hard for a community, a public, a victim to kind of wrap their mind around. And so it can be super challenging to then instill in a youth kind of how careful they need to be and how serious they need to take kind of what they're going through and taking care of their charges because of all of the repercussions that can happen to them without them even really trying. And you're dealing with kids. There's, like, honestly nothing more challenging than dealing with kids, but then also trying to help kids understand a justice system can be very hard. Kids and families who have never done something like this and never really been through a process like this, it's really important to be able to just kind of take that time and slow everything down and break it down. It's a lot more complicated on the inside, I think, than it looks like on the outside, because it's just not the same as an adult system.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so where does that motivation to face that challenge and do that important work come from for you?
You know, I've always loved kids. And I think that, you know, more and more that I've grown up kind of in a generation with a lot of social media and a lot of internet and things like that, just knowing how important I think the youth are for our future of Lane County, future of the world in general. And so being kind of like in that system has really motivated me. And I just don't think, because of the outside view of what happens in the juvenile justice system, I think that it has motivated me to, like, really spin that around and give that a different turn and like be someone that people can talk to about what happens and kind of what the juvenile justice system is like so they can better understand. So there is a better understanding and not this kind of skewed view of kids just like getting off or kids like not actually having to step up and take, take responsibility kind of like for their actions and what they've done. And also, I mean, just with being a Black woman, and then also just the disproportionate like minority contact that goes on, it just kind of propels me even more because, I mean, a lot of people's first view when they think of like a criminal can be someone that's a person of color or a minority. And so to be able to flip that script also and just kind of know the numbers of Lane County, that is not all accurate either.
So your work obviously entails a piece of that, you know, looking at a disproportionate minority contact, some of the overarching systemic issues that we are trying to rectify in our community, in our nation, in our world. But let's take a step back and talk about this sort of piece of our strategic plan, a foundational kind of element that I think kind of pervades the entire department, maybe the entire county. And around equity, and how does that relate to your personal experience? How have you dived into equity work?
Well, equity is embedded in just literally everything we do, especially at the county and especially just kind of within when it comes down to the nitty-gritty of working with people, you're going to be looking at equity. And I first got into equity work at the county. I was on our, our local diversity committee at Youth Services. And then I was asked to be on HNHS's equity committee, which then bumped me. And I am now on E2 equity committee, which I've sat on that, I think, for probably about 2 years now. And so it was kind of like this progression where I started small and it was nice to be able to do the work kind of within Youth Services, but then I realized how much more kind of I wanted to do and wanted there to be voices from kind of those smaller levels on bigger teams. And so that really kind of propelled knowing what we have to do just within Youth Services with our kind of, we had racial inequity like kind of report come out, which was like really helpful. It helped us kind of look at our jobs and what we do. And that we knew was going to be shared with the county. So then just kind of the natural progression of being able to have my hands in and be a little more involved in things that are on a bigger scale was what motivated me to really get more and more involved in the equity work. Because I mean, taking the chance to look at anything through an equity, I'll just use the term equity lens, is extremely important because if we're not paying attention to who we're impacting, possible barriers that they might see, potential barriers they already have or potential barriers that we can remove, if we're not kind of making sure that we're paying attention to the entire population with the decision that we're making, then we can really marginalize and leave people out. And a lot of times that ends up being minorities, and that ends up being those that are less privileged. And so with that in mind, and being someone that's grown up in this community, wanting to give back to that community in a meaningful way is what's just kind of driven and blossomed so much more of my equity work and equity involvement.
Yeah. Can you just elaborate a little? E2, I don't know what that committee is. Or
yes. So that is the like basically cross-county equity committee, and it's equity and education is what the two E's stand for. And so like Steve Mokerheisky is on that. We have quite a few of the managers, Greg Rickoff, and then they picked kind of intermediate, like I think HNHS has a few reps just because we're so big. But then from each of the other counties, like A&T, TS, all of them, everyone kind of has a representative that comes together. And it's kind of a broader scale where we then have delved into making subcommittees, which is kind of how I ended up on an equity lens and a racial equity core team. And because then we can like delineate and kind of give different jobs to different groups. But we are kind of the committee that's looking at big, big picture equity items.
So and what items, like you just mentioned a couple of subcommittees. So can you give us some examples of like specific things that you're working on or groups?
Yeah, so the Equity Lens Toolkit has been mine and our subcommittee's life for quite some time now. We've been working really hard on this Equity Lens Toolkit, and it has been challenging and also very rewarding work because we've got to work with so many different people and also pull work from other groups and other counties. We even got some assistance from an equity lens tool from Ottawa, Canada. So it's been a really, this equity lens work has been a really rewarding experience. It's a lot of work, and at times it's felt like we're like kind of going nowhere because we also have our normal jobs that don't consist just of the equity lens. But then we have just kind of some great, great breakthroughs, and we've been able to smallly implement it on some projects like the Holiday Farm Fire and like COVID vaccinations. We've been able to kind of pilot and use those as pilots for the equity lens that we've developed to just kind of see and get some feedback so that we find out what's working, what isn't working. Like, was this actually somewhere we should have used an equity lens, because like the actual toolkit, because not every question and not every project is going to fit into it. And that's something we're also learning as we go through. And so, and it's kind of, it's just really been what about I talked about earlier in terms of who are we impacting? Kind of what's the purpose? Who's it gonna impact? What are the likely outcomes? And then how are we gonna communicate that to the public? How are you gonna communicate what the goals are, what the goals we reached out of it, and then evaluate how that actually worked and if it is working? Because I think that when we would start to bring this forward and in some of the pilots, it was like, well, this didn't work. And it's like, that's actually okay. That like, it doesn't mean that like something's wrong or like we're unable, there's no equity in that situation. It's just not like the correct project with the correct kind of outline of the purpose and goal.
How in the world do we change that or help that situation with some committees that we're working on? I mean, help me connect the dots with the practical aspects of what we're doing and what are the implications of this work?
It's very, it's been hugely important for us to break things down and not kind of bite off more than we can chew when it comes to wanting to look at equity, because you're right. It's like when you're just talking about thinking about things being equitable, it's like that's a big ask when you aren't, especially with, on the level of a county, and we're talking about hundreds of thousands of people. And so I think that to kind of connect, it's looking at those actual programs, like working with people like DD Services and with public health, to where it's directly impacting in a way that can be like quantified at like kind of at a remedial level, because not everyone like has the same sort of understanding, experience, and working with equity. And so if we're going to kind of work with the community on things to make them more equitable and get them more understanding, we have to be able to be kind of directly within the community and working with them directly on those options, I think is a big, big part of it.
Yeah. Regarding like the toolkit, can you kind of detail us out a little bit about what that is or what might be coming our way in Health and Human Services?
Yeah, we're so close. It feels like we say this every time, but we're like, we are really getting close. It's been basically cross-cutting. I think we're going back to the board. We've taken it in front of the board a couple times once so far. And I think we're going to go back just to get like a final, like go forth and prosper from them. But the toolkit is really so... And the couple groups that have piloted it is if they kind of have, so if we take the Holiday Farm Fire, for example, it was kind of virtual, like the response to that. And so what was really important is let's start like at the purpose. So the purpose was making sure that there was like equitable services, equitable supplies and kind of response and things like that around all areas. And so then it was, the next question is thinking about like within the toolkit is like, okay, so who's this going to impact? And one of the potential ways it could positively or negatively impact, especially looking at marginalized and underserved populations. Because if you're going to do something that's just going to actually negatively impact them, that's where you kind of want to pause there and you want to take a step back within the toolkit and go back to what your purpose is and kind of refigure that. And so it's really breaking things down and taking like your issue or your question or kind of like that bigger thing step by step and looking at each piece of it with a mind frame of equity so that that becomes the main focus rather than are we getting the job done?
I really appreciate that because I think, again, it can seem overwhelming. It can seem like, well, how do I do this? You know, if something's not equitable, how do I make it equitable? Because maybe if I approach it the wrong way, I'll just further that inequity.
Yeah.
But that toolkit sounds like what you're really doing is just giving our staff and people who are looking at different programs or services, it's kind of a how-to book.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. Which the county's been actually very good at lately. I've voiced over another how-to training. Because I think that it's like we're basically giving people or the other county employees the opportunity and kind of the tools, if you will, to be able to look at things from the way that we have been grinding our minds to look through, to kind of make this, to break it down, to make it easier for our employees to use. Because this is going to be something where we are going to be training others on how to give this training and work the toolkit so that it's not just us, because we're a group of like, I think six, and there's no way that we could tell everyone and show everyone how to use this and make that whole process. So it's also the type of thing where we're teaching people how to break these things down and look through the equity lens, but then we're also teaching them how to kind of see it on their own and see the equity first so that they can expand and teach others how to do it and then kind of use the toolkit in that way. And so it's this complete like trickle down of it being of then kind of just helping people not even really need a toolkit to kind of just immediately start viewing something from an equity lens or having that in the forefront of their mind when they're going forth in their work.
I'm curious if you could talk a little bit about how like equity or thinking about your work with an equity kind of lens, how that impacts your day-to-day work at Youth Services.
Yeah, I think it gets really important, I think, is highlighted most often when we're looking at youth who are detaining and kind of what their background is, what their home life is like. And then, of course, you know, just are they a minority or are they a person of color? Because it can be very glaring at how kind of a family who maybe a family of color has already been marginalized in our community and has not received maybe equitable services or proper services that are now impacting their child who is coming with us to where like we can't necessarily send them back to a home that's not a stable home. So we're having to keep them in detention more for their safety than it ends up being for like a community safety risk, which can feel horrible to not have somewhere else to have a kid be for them to be safe than in detention with us in somewhere that's in a locked facility. And so it's really important for us when we are looking at how we're supporting youth and their families while they're working with us and what services we're providing them and who we're connecting them to. Because there are really going to be families who don't need as much from us. And so sometimes it's important to know that we don't have to be ridiculously hands-on with every single family. And that's where it's kind of like how much attention which family is going to get from me and in what ways is kind of where our equity really delves in. Because one family might not need the same things, or we just know one family is not going to always need the same things that another family needs. And so it's important for us to make sure that we're paying attention to that and not trying to put all these kids in the same box, because there's just 6 million boxes for any of these kids to fit in at one time. And so to making sure that we're looking at that in an equitable way and not an equal way in our work is super important.
Yeah, and I think if you just want a quick, I know you're very into equity work, so you can probably do this pretty off the top of your head for those that haven't done as much, but can you just talk like briefly the difference between equitable and equal?
Yeah, it's just kind of like the one thing is like one size does not fit all and will not fit all in most of our work here at the county. And so it's really about making sure that we are meeting families where they're at and giving them the services that they need, not necessarily a service that's on the list.
So I'm gonna put you on the spot here, but I'm, you know, the equity toolkit is not out yet, but I'm assuming that you have taken some of the elements of the equity toolkit throughout your career and applied them to certain situations when you're working in youth services. Do you have a story, anything that comes to mind of a positive impact that you've seen play out when you've done that and you know, where you've actually tangibly seen the difference that applying that equity lens can make?
I've honestly seen it be pretty, I think, most successful in some of our crossover work and our kind of like almost roundtable and wraparound services work. Because if we, so I can kind of think about a case where we had co-offenders, just very different kind of walks of life, different backgrounds. And so it like just kind of, but same crime. It's like they did the exact same thing. They're charged with the exact same thing, but they were being viewed very, very differently. And especially across, again, social media and just kind of the way that their names were being played out were very, very different. And we were able to actually work really closely with DD Services and DHS with one of the families to kind of have that wraparound work where we then also were able to use some of our funding to support the victim restitution aspect for that youth due to their background, where this other youth did not actually need that support. And what we actually watched happen is both of these families, because the kids were, the youths were friends, but families weren't necessarily, but we saw much more of a community effort to then end up supporting the youth. It was more underprivileged as we kind of got to show them like what the whole walks of life was, and also as they started to understand what the actual juvenile justice process these youths were going through, and that we weren't just going to be locking them up. And it was just great to see, because it felt like we had more of a community noticing the differences in how we were handling each youth's case because of meeting each youth where they were at. And it was like, we had a family that was like, well, we heard that so-and-so is getting this, why aren't we getting this? And it was kind of like, well, let's like talk about that. Like let's lay that out and like think about it and like look at these situations. And it's like, why would you think that you would be getting the same thing as them, and why would they be getting the same thing as you? So we almost got to like explain equity to like our families. Wow. And so that was kind of cool, because then it was like, that was where you got to show them like, well, one size doesn't fit all. And it's like, do you necessarily want to be getting those services? Because that's actually because they've been underserved already. Like, you are properly served. We're having to boost them up to kind of find that equal or equitable playing field.
And one thing we're trying to do with this podcast, I think, is be sort of honest with our coworkers about the hard places. So can you talk about some of the like, kind of the hard places and the barriers in your work, like, and in doing, you know, the best job you can do, like where those hard spots are?
I mean, dealing with kids, it's always really, really hard. And I think that when you see charges of a kid on the outside and like, you know what they've been charged with, and if that's all you see, then that can be, you know, it just leads you to kind of like give your own opinion about the whole situation. But the important part of our work is that, you know, we're reading through these reports and we're reading through, and then we're meeting with these families and we're asking them about their home lives and about their past traumas. And you just hear some of the worst things to ever happen to someone who's like 12 to 17 years old and has like barely lived any life yet. And but then it's like, and then they have just like this whole painted picture of them as a criminal when that's actually not essentially what's going on. And it can be really, really hard when we don't have the ability to serve them at the county level when they're not necessarily a more criminal kid. And I think one of the biggest challenges is just the lack of mental health services for youth. Like, it's just really unfortunate. It's not anyone's fault. It's just about not being like a lot of providers out there and like ability, and just for youth especially too, because so many times we will come across kids where they're not criminal kids. They just don't have the mental capacity to be making those correct decisions. And that's just what's driving them to do things that's then criminal, like if it's assaultive or things like that, or if they're stealing or running away. And it's just so unfortunate when you feel like you have to further a kid into the juvenile justice system or into the system in general just to get them more support. And so if that means like sending them to like the Oregon Youth Authority, where they're at more of like the state level, and you've driven them farther, but then it's like, you know that like that's actually the only level where they're going to get the support that they need.
So you mentioned social media. And I typically try to make a habit of never reading news story comments, because you kind of see the bottom of the barrel there. But I did on some of our recent youth services stories, and it was just that. It's really defeating, you know, to see. How do you, as someone who's working with these kids, who you probably see a lot of hope there, a lot of promise, a lot of potential for their future, how do you cope with that when you happen to come across those comments, when you see that our community members that we rub shoulders with think this way?
Well, I mean, I think that I like just enjoy pain and suffering sometimes, because I will read for hours. I read for hours. I'll read the comments on comments. Like, I can just read those for so long. And I think some of that is doing this work, you have to know that that's going to happen, and that you have people that just have zero idea of the process or what is supposed to happen. It can be really, really defeating, especially when people are virtually saying that they want to inflict harm on a child. I think that is some of the hardest, when they're saying, and also just the really kind of old school views of like, well, their parents should have hit them, or like, where are the parents? And like, and I think that's also hard too, is knowing that sometimes you have these parents that are doing absolutely everything they have for the kid, and it's just not their fault. But then you have people that are just, you know, immediately go to that. And some of it, like, we've just, like, my coworkers and I, it's a little bit sometimes it's fun and it's kind of enjoyment because you're just kind of like, what the heck are you saying? Like, you do know you're talking about a kid, right? And so some of it you're just like, my goodness. But then other stuff, yeah, it's weird to know that there's people walking around in the community that are like that. And that is, I think, we actually have to take that and instill that in our kids, especially our minority youth, of just what the public view on them is, like, if anyone knows who they are, because their pictures will go up so fast before we even know who they are. The community has identified them because everyone has seen it now. And like with ones that we've had in the recent past, we just had to really instill, like, I don't want you to be fearful, but I almost want you to be fearful. I want you to feel like you have a little bit of, I mean, I never want to call it a target on my back when I'm talking, but I want to say that, like, I want you to have more armor on your body. I need you to be a little safer, a little more careful, and just kind of be by the book on everything, because other people aren't. It's not necessarily that I need to fix something that you're doing. It's more that I'm worried about others who I'm not working with, who I can't fix what they're doing.
Well, and I guess I'm curious, you've talked a couple of times about, you know, misunderstanding the system or the purpose of the system. So maybe some of our health and human service people listening to this have those. So you want to kind of maybe give us some accurate information on kind of what the goals and missions are? Or?
Definitely. And actually, I know that a piece of the strategic plan that's just ending had some pieces on it. I was down, I think Greg actually told me about it, was talking with me about it, because I mean, recidivism rates are really what we're looking at, and kind of risk to reoffend, especially with juveniles. We are looking at, we do a juvenile crime prevention risk assessment with them, which is, I mean, it's very remedial. It's like kind of a lot of yes or no questions to ask, and kind of, and that gives, pops us out a risk score, which it thinks that's their possibility to criminally reoffend. And that's what we work off of in terms of how we work with them, how often we're working with them, like what we want to get them engaged with, so that it's not, like we said, like one size fits all within that at all. And it's like, how long are they going to be with us? Because we don't want them, anyone to be on formal, and that's only on formal or informal probation. It's like, we have both. And that's the thing, especially for youth, not all youth are going to court. That's, I think, one thing that people don't necessarily understand, is not every youth sees a judge that comes through us, because we hope that we don't have to take them to court. That's like last ditch effort. We hope that maybe they can go through a diversion program, because we offer diversion programs. Maybe they can just be on an informal, like, which is kind of like a contract with us, which we call a formal accountability agreement. And so our work is really trying to hope to make them not reoffend, but then also set them up and prop them up with services, whether that be getting them in therapy or things like that, that can also better them and better the home environment, better their school environment, just kind of support them in becoming all around better youth, so that once they are adults, 18 years old, they do kind of have a better outlook and a better kind of step up into things. But what we are not is locking people up and locking kids up and like trying to lock them up all the time. That is literally the last thing we want to do. We try really, really hard to not have to detain kids.
So going along with this sort of community education piece, I think one of the, you know, obviously when we're doing equity work, when we're applying the equity lens on our daily interactions, on the programs, on everything that we're doing within HHS, within, you know, youth services, whatnot, we're doing that for the people we serve, you know. But what are some of the other implications? Do we have the opportunity to be leaders in the community through the work that we're doing with our clients?
Definitely. I think that, because I mean, I think community education is huge, because, I mean, anyone in the community also at any point could end up being a county employee. They could end up being someone who's then teaching and giving back to their community. And so I think that the more that people feel empowered by the work and the equity work that they're doing, the more knowledge that our employees get about it and then are able to kind of facilitate, that then seeps into our homes, that seeps into our friend groups and like all of our social gatherings, things like that, where your conversations, like I will find sometimes that my conversations are just different, especially when you're talking about maybe like a hot button item or like something political, like all of a sudden, like I'm like, well, it doesn't seem very equitable. And it's like, you just like, kind of like, it's like that just little like kind of glips and turn in your mind, where I think that as then more we learn and we go out into the community and just do our day-to-day lives that isn't at work, we're going to be so much more invested in it in general and realize that it doesn't just matter in the work that we're doing. It matters in all aspects of life, and we should all be looking at things through some sort of equity lens, that I think that's where community education and engagement is going to be really cool, because it's just going to be us able to give that knowledge to others, either like on purpose or by accident.
I'm curious, you know, when we're talking about some of this, and especially, you know, you bringing yourself to work, you let us know that you're a Black woman in Eugene, Oregon, which is not necessarily the most diverse place in the world. You know, when you see resistance to equity, because you see it, mm-hmm. and sometimes you're surprised where you see it, mm-hmm. and sometimes it's not overt resistance, but it's still there. It's that little pushback. How does that impact you? And then, you know, what do you do about that?
Yeah, sometimes it's funny. It's like you can always, if you get that pushback, there's always that second where I'm like, you get that kind of like little eye twitch of like, why are you pushing back though? I'm like, are you looking at me and pushing back? Or are you like looking at everything and pushing back? And so that's a little strange, but I've learned that to kind of take the pushback and like kind of like figure out which way it's coming from. Because if it's pushback with more of a conversation and it like it's developing and it's starting a conversation, I like that pushback because then it just feels like the questions are being asked and like it needs to be like more information shared for someone to understand it. If it's the kind of pushback where it's just like, nah or no, it's that one is a little more frustrating because then it just feels like, well, why are we putting so much emphasis on equity and the county really caring about equity if it's just going to be shut down it like behind closed doors or in smaller areas? It's like, you know, you can like talk all this talk and you can have it come from, you know, the higher ups and come from managers, but then if managers and directors aren't supporting their employees through that work or aren't supporting that being furthered or engaged, then it's kind of like, what's the point? Like, I don't want to just be talking to not actually be doing the work. And so sometimes it just can be reframing and or just like meeting it at a different level or trying to find a different level. And other times it's just knowing that you might have to just take a different route.
So what could people, other staff in Health and Human Services do to support the work that you're doing, or what, you know, how or when would they connect with you about kind of that integration work?
Yeah, I think that one is going to be pay attention to your emails. But I think just when you start to see this equity lens and work come up, like, don't let that kind of like sit. Ask questions, want to ask questions, want to learn more. I think that's going to be the biggest, and to just really be pushing, looking at things through an equity lens, especially if you're starting projects, if you're hiring, if you're, you know, like kind of retention, all of that type of stuff, is to really think about equity in all of these situations, because it is in all of these situations. And don't be afraid to mess up or ask questions, because that's all we've done for like the past year and a half is mess up, fix things, make it all better to where it's going to be pretty with the shiny bow. And so I think that to support us, it's just going to be really important to want to do the work also. Like, you don't have to be as integrated as us to want things to be equitable and support equity. And so I think it's just knowing the importance of it and then taking that and putting that into the everyday work that we do.
So, you know, kind of where do we start? What's, you know, if I'm listening to this podcast and I'm like, okay, I'm going to start focusing on equity, what are the first steps that a person can take?
All right, so there's definitely, Mo Young, our fantastic Mo Young, has, we have an equity, on the Lane County website, there is an equity section, there's equity and access section, and there actually is a link to our two-pager, I believe, that is out now, that there's a short version and an expanded version kind of what the heck the Equity Lens Toolkit is and what its goals is. And it kind of gives you that, like touched on before, about the purpose, the inclusion, and it either gives you a short version or expands it a little and like put some questions on it to help understand. So that's one place where you can look at it. Another thing that we have going on is a bit of like a how-to training video, which, shout out my mom, Krista Noble, she's in it, you'll see her, which that is also going to give people a visual way of kind of figuring out how to do this work and how to use this Equity Lens Toolkit, because we know people learn and in a lot of different ways, and so we want to give some of the material, which you can find on the county website, and then this video that will also come out, or could be out, that will give kind of a how-to on how to go forward with using the toolkit.
Awesome. Well, Mackenzie, thank you so much for joining us today. It has been incredibly elaborative. I also thank you for sharing some personal aspects, because I know, you know, that's vulnerable. That's, you know, it can be tough. So I really appreciate that. I thank you for your time, and thank you for the work you're doing. I think this is, again, the implications are bigger than those day-to-day interactions. They really kind of spanned our entire community. And I'd love to look back in a few years and see what we've done here, and the positive impact we've had on our community. So thank you for spearheading that, being part of that group.
Yeah, thanks for having me. It's a great opportunity to be able to talk about this, because we've been working on it, and it's like our baby now. So we're pretty proud to show out and have a little showing of our baby and tell everyone about it. So thanks for giving me the chance.
Thank you. And thanks for elaborating too on your day-to-day job. That's definitely a division and area that I knew very little about, kind of the day-to-day work. So it's cool to hear more about what you do.
Yeah.
in addition to the equity work and all the other things you bring to the job here.
Yes. Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you for taking the time to listen once again.